You are listening to WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network, coming to you from the heart of the Q in Quitman, Mississippi.
Old Men Stories, a show just about old men? Not hardly. It's a name that conjures up the image of someone who's been through it all, seen it all, and survived it all, like the storytellers of old. That wisdom comes with age. But all age is relative. You don't have to be old. You don't have to be male. You just have to live the story and survive to tell the tale. Join Master Storytellers Roland Willits and Jeff Young now as we start today's journey.
Roland Willits.
And Jeff Young.
Old Men Stories. Welcome to our show. We have some wonderful stories to share. This is a little introduction of what we will share this hour. During our 90th show, City Living pops up its head. We all have some tie with cities, to be raised in them or just visit. Cities and parts of cities have different personalities. What are your feelings about cities? We are drawn to cluster as humans and then divide to find our place of comfort or survival. First, in what city were you raised, or which city did you visit? What were the highlights of that area? Second, how did you fit into that area? Are you still there? What has changed and what has stayed the same? Tell a homey city story and add to your collection of old men stories. Third, we share fun stories. Fourth, we have some new masters sharing life stories.
Good afternoon, everyone, from Fremont, California. It's Old Men Stories with Jeff Young and Roland Willits. Today's episode is all about city living. And I, as Roland prompted, was born in New York City, which, for those of you who are not familiar with New York City and New York State, it's one of the largest cities in the world. There's a saying, or there was a saying, it's probably bigger now, if you're one in a million, there are 7.5 of you in New York City. New York City is one of the most expensive places to live in the United States, where rents are easily above $1,600 for a one-bedroom place in the city, if not higher. And the big reason to live there is for the atmosphere, although why anybody would want to live in a place where the air quality is certainly, shall we say, less than stellar. I'll tell a story about that in a second. But mostly it's to be near the center of the action, if you will. I have a lot of relatives still back in the city, and they work in Manhattan, and they say they love it. They love the fact that everything in the city is a good train right away. To each their own, I suppose. I've never been very fond of subways. I get claustrophobic, you see. And I am very much fond of the city that I live in right now, which is San Jose, California, where you can see the hills on one side and the valley stretching away in the other direction. And you can see the sky in most directions because San Jose in particular has an ordinance for building where you can't have that many high-rises. The running joke is that if you did, they'd fall over in the next earthquake. And I can say that my first job out of college was at the top of one of these very few high-rise buildings in the Bay Area, and I worked on the 13th floor of a building. Apparently, they hadn't heard about the aversion that Americans have to the number 13 in the Japanese building plans they have for it, but I believe the fourth floor was the one that was missing, which is kind of strange. And of course, there was the bridge to nowhere because they had planned to build a second building to go with the first one. So there were these double doors on the second floor of the building that if you walked out of them, you would fall straight down one story to the ground. Now, what defines the difference between a city and a suburb? Apparently, the idea is that any given area of the city is zoned either business, industrial, or residential. And your typical city center is built around the business sector, where you have your offices, your light industrial places. As you get further out, of the city, you either get more residential things, or if you go towards the non-inhabitable or less inhabitable parts of town, you see more of the factories. And most city planning places tend to have their city layout zoned for any particular type of thing. And it's really tough for folks who are builders to get into an area. I have an uncle who had to work on permits with the city, and he talked about how you had to have the permits to build a commercial business in a residential area. That you had to have a petition from the residents of the area that they're okay with having this in there. And if you think back, sometimes you'll see survey takers or petition takers saying, hey, do you want this Walmart built here, or do you not want this Walmart built here? Because whenever you have a new business come into an area, technically that should mean job, but not always. And I remember a story that Roland told at one point for Toastmasters, how the big thing where he used to live was the chicken plucking factory that got people from all over the world to come work there. And it's really kind of strange, but that was considered a big source of work at the time. And you have places like the auto cities, Detroit, where if they shut the auto plant down, the jobs go with it are from the surrounding area. And around here, a little bit to the north of where I'm working in Fremont, there is the NUMMI plant, the Nissan Motors United or whatever, I think it's the initials for it, but it employed a few thousand people. And when they shut down, all the people were at work. And it's hard to find something to replace a very specialized technical job. Now, the Tesla Motor Company moved into the same plant, and they hired some people back, but not as many as what he's working in that particular plant. So the thing about living in the city is that you're closer to your job. The bad thing about living in the city is that you're closer to your job.
And here's Roland.
Aha, there he is.
Hi, Jeff. I got a little tied up, and I was up 5 minutes late.
Did you untie yourself?
City life. I'm sitting here out in the rural. I was raised in the city. I was raised in Minneapolis, and Minneapolis is a bigger city, but back in the 50s and 40s, it was a much calmer place than New York or Chicago or Detroit. And it was a place that we never locked our door, except when we went away on vacation. And it was really cool because what we did to lock the door, you got to get this, is Ma would take a knife out of the drawer. She'd take one of her kitchen knives, and she would stick it between, because we didn't have a lock on it, the frame for the door, and she'd push it through, and the knife would hold the door closed. And that was our lock security. So it was a different type of city then, Minneapolis was. Jeff?
All cities have their character. And one of the things that I always notice about a city is that it tends to have a distinctive skyline in a lot of cases. There are landmarks, and the screensaver that master storyteller Laura Davis has often shows city skylines. And we have a guessing game at our house where we say, okay, this is this particular city, or this is that particular city. And sometimes it's easy. Like, if you see the Space Needle in the background, you know you're looking at Seattle. If you used to live in New York, depending on which way you're looking, you could tell from the Empire State Building and what used to be the World Trade Center, but isn't there anymore. And on my recent trip back to New York City, driving over the bridge from Queens into Manhattan, my aunt and I, who are from California these days, said, oh, is that the new Freedom Tower? And my mom said, no, that's the Chrysler Building. Is that the new Freedom Tower? No, that's not it either. So the thing about that is that when you have an iconic skyline, there's got to be something that's pretty drastic to alter it. But on the other hand, building always happens. And I think I touched briefly on the fact that the place that I used to live when I was a kid is now a sushi place, no longer a butcher shop, and just marveling how much the old neighborhood is gone. And Mom made a point of taking us around the old neighborhood, and my aunt and I were reminiscing about what used to be here and here and there, and just recognizing that everything that I knew from my childhood is pretty much gone, except for the residential bits. And I remember taking one last look around my grandmother's and grandfather's place where they used to live, And I said, you know, I'm never coming back here again. I'm never going to see the inside of this particular place again. And life goes on. This city is something that is more than the individuals that are in it. It is definitely changing. And I've got an article here in front of me that talks about Long Island City and Hunter's Point, in particular, in Queens, where they have taken off the rail yards where they used to roll freight, and they turned it into a residential area. And the idea is that they want to do this. This is the catchy theme, the locomotives to living rooms theme. And they've taken a number of years to do this, to get the building permits and the rezoning of something from industrial to residential, just to put up a bunch of apartment complexes. But even then, they're putting up a specific feel and look to them. So it's stylish. It's got a character to it, they say in the article. And I have to agree. It's different from... There are places out in the suburbs where the Eichlers out here made a whole bunch of post-war housing where every house was exactly the same. They built them to spec. They built them off of plans. So you've seen one Eichler house, you've seen them all. And of course, if you know the problems that go with one of those houses, namely the roof construction making it really hard to keep cool in the summer, then you know what you're going to get when you see the outside of one of those houses. Now, that being said, being able to know what the inside of a house is going to be like without even seeing it is really helpful when you're shopping for a house. So I guess what I'm saying is that when it comes down to city living, you have to decide why you are in the city that you're in. Because a city has all the character and characteristics of not having a space around you. It's having an attached place. It's having concrete sidewalks in front of you when you walk out your door instead of a lawn. It's little things like that. It's having a gas station that's just down the road and a 7-Eleven down the other way. And these days, being able to throw a brick in two different directions and hitting two different Starbucks. Anyway, Roland, I've been talking for a bit. You want to comment on that?
Oh, you've been talking wonderful, Jeff. I may have frightened you there. Instead of a city fright. City fright. It's like getting off in some of the suburbs that you don't, or some of the burbs that you don't want to get off in, and start walking around and saying, "Oh my golly gee, what's going on here?" It was like I've been in them both. I was in Watts, and it was sort of frightening because I was in my RV pulling my car, and I made a wrong turn. And I ended up in the middle of this area where all these people gave me these ugly stares. And I had my big 40-foot luxury RV driving down the road there. And I was on a main road. And then I thought I'd made the right turn. And I ended up in an industrial section in the same area. And there was no one there. And I was lost. And I said, "Oh my golly gee." I didn't quite say golly gee. And I says, I just got to keep driving and get me out of here. And so I kept driving and driving. And finally, I was just in another part of town. And normally, if I'm just driving a car and I don't have anything that they can see of value, it doesn't bother me to drive anywhere in our country. And but with something that big, and all the value that they can, that someone would see within it, it was scary. It was like driving a stagecoach through that kind of area, so through the Badlands. And I did the same thing in New York City. I got on Broadway. Jeff, you know where Broadway is?
Mm-hmm.
And I drove the whole Broadway from the one end to the other, and there were some really shady spots along the way, because when I got to them, it was nighttime, and you'd see all these girls on the corners, and you'd see these people coming out of bars, and it was a little terrifying in the RV. Now, when I was growing up, and I was in my late teens and early 20s, and I used to be, I've told you the story, I was a boxer, and so I knew a lot of people in the those type areas where they train and do boxing. And I would go down to Seven Corners. That was sort of the rough spot in Minneapolis. And me and my buddy Bill would bar hop. And city, you know, for me, it wasn't frightening at all. I was young. I was single. I had no responsibilities, and I thought I could handle myself on any situation. But it was really funny because city kids are a little different, because all of a sudden I saw a couple of old buddies, and they came down the road, and they were celebrating, and they had a gang of about 8-9 guys, and they said, "Oh, Roland, how are you?" And they came over. We, you know, said hi and what's going on, and I said, "What are you doing? You're really celebrating." He said, "Yeah, I just got out of the pen." He says, "I'm out." And I said, "Celebrating." And he says, "Yeah, great." He says, "What are you doing?" He says, "Oh, I'm having a good time before I end up back there again." So you could see what his life was scheduled for. But you find that in the cities, and you don't find that very much out in the country. Jeff?
I have to say that the country, or being countrified, if you will, depends on where you live. Because I can tell you that what passes for country out here, if you aren't going down south to where the farms are, tends to be where the more well-to-do folks have moved. As soon as you get out of the city proper, you get into the places where the houses cost upwards of $1 million and then some, and you get these beautiful views of the city. And I looked at a house this past weekend where the listing said, "Great views of the city," and it was a 4-bedroom place. It's a little bigger than I wanted. And they did indeed have really good views of the city. In a backyard, they had these terraces and lots of ground cover and a 2-car garage with a sloping thing or driveway going up to it, and a sound system that was set up to play multiple rooms, fireplaces in two different floors even. And I said, "This is a really nice house. I don't want it. It's too big and too much maintenance." So the idea of what is outside the city can vary from place to place. And so one of the cultural things that we have is that if you live in the city, it's less expensive because you can commute. If you live further out, the houses are more expensive because you have more space, but then you have to commute in and spend more money on a car. Except for the fact when you're living in the city where you're in the entertainment district, in which case it's still more expensive. So a lot of it depends on where you live. And master storyteller Kat Welge recently sent me to a site where she was comparing living in San Diego versus living in San Jose. And part of the listing says, this is where you live, this is how much the rents are in the city center, and outside the city where you have to commute. And it's kind of interesting, this comparison, where if you're living in the middle of everything, it's more expensive. If you're living all the way away from everything, it's more expensive. There is really no good place to live except for where you think you can pay for where you're living. And in my ongoing search for a place of my own, there are neighborhoods where the price is a lot lower to pay for a place, but then you look at the crime reports and you say, "Oh, that's why." Or you drive down there and you say, "Oh, everyone's looking at me and I don't belong here. That's why." You get a feel for where you want to live based on the neighborhood. You look for folks who are hopefully like you, and whether or not you can get to work okay from that first good spot. And before I pass things back to Roland for a last bit before the break, one thing I did want to say is that the good thing about being in the city versus not being in the city is that if you get lost, if you drive long enough, you will either hit the edge of the city or you will hit a highway and then hopefully figure out which way you're supposed to go from there. Unless you live in the Bay Area, in which case the highways are a confusing loop and cloverleaf mess. Now, if this is opposed to getting lost in Oregon, in Wilsonville, when I went out there by myself, and I started driving what I thought was away from work and kept driving, and as I kept driving, I started seeing less and less houses and more cows. And I said, I am definitely going the wrong way, because I was supposed to be in the city of Wilsonville, and I wasn't anymore. Roland.
I understand that. You get out of town, and the blocks are big. They are huge. It's like a mile each one. You get in town and the blocks are like, there's what is it, 12 blocks to a mile. So you get out and it's like if you miss a turn when you go in the city, you can turn on the next block. You miss a turn when you're in the country and you go a mile or two. So it's a long way around the block.
Ah,
then a lot of times, yep, go ahead.
Have you ever walked around San Francisco or downtown Manhattan?
Yes, I've walked around San Francisco, and yes, I've walked around downtown Manhattan. Yes, I've walked around both. Just sort of in the center of town, and you know, out to the statue, you know, and then went out to the Statue of Liberty and went around there. In San Francisco, I lived there and walked all around it. So yeah, both of them are they're small towns. San Francisco is only 7 miles by 7 miles.
See? But there's something very deceptive about a city block where someone says, "Oh yeah, it's just four blocks." It's four city blocks. I found that out the hard way one time. Anyway, you were saying?
Yeah, it is the it's very deceptive a block when you call a block. When I was growing up, we had. In the area I was at, they had a huge section of square blocks. So you could call a block and you knew what it was. But it's when I moved to the Bay Area, because of the bay and the curvature and the land and everything, there weren't many areas that had square block structures. You know, for example, my place that I have in San Francisco is on Mission Boulevard up on the hill. I'm just barely on the hill. But in front of me is Mission Boulevard, which is one of main streets on the east side of San Francisco Bay. And in back of me, to get to my first neighbor, I have to go 4 miles. Isn't that something? It's like,
indeed. Wow.
What?
Indeed.
If you went around the block to the back of me, it's about 15 miles. For 20 miles. It's a long, long, long drive. So, time's ending, and we'll wait for you right at the end of it, and we have a good story.
Yep. See you in a bit.
You're listening to Old Men Stories on WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network. Roland and Jeff will be right back with more of Old Men Stories after this short break.
Software, giving stability, service, and excellence.
Thank you, Terry, for the leadership at Mom Software and the noble example you set for all. From our home here in Silicon Valley, and from where it all started in San Francisco 35 years ago, welcome you to Old Men Stories. We hope you will continue listening to our radio presentation. We know you will hear a few wonderful stories that started from the home of Mom Software. www.momsoftware.com. One word, one S.
Old Men Stories on WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network. You're invited to join the circle and share your comments and questions in our always open chat room at http://oldmenstories.wq4dradio.com. That's http://oldmenstories.wq4dradio.com. Now, let's give a warm welcome to our hosts, Roland and Jeff, as we continue today's storytelling journey.
Welcome back to the second half of Old Man Stories. We have a very long story for you today. So, Roland, you want to tell us about the storyteller for today, and then we'll take it away?
You know, we were talking about cities, and my 96-year-old mother and my brother, he just turned 65, were telling about the old neighborhood. And you got to get, this may be a little boring for people that aren't city people, but you got to look at it from, this is the old neighborhood. Take her away.
Hey. Here we are. Back again, Bob.
Yes, sir.
No matter 65 years now we've been together.
Yeah, that's not that long.
I just had a birthday.
Oh, you did? That's right.
65 years old, Leon. You know, we came from a really, really exciting neighborhood. Well, at least for our kids, it was.
Oh, was it?
Oh, yeah. It was all right after World War II, you know, and we were all boomers.
Yes.
All the neighbors had kids.
They sure did.
All the moms stayed home.
Yes, they didn't work like they do nowadays.
No, they didn't work hardly at all.
They stayed home at home.
We knew all the
up and down them hot one block. We knew all the women.
I think the only one that worked was Hazel Fisher. She was a cashier at National Tea.
Yeah.
Yeah, and her kids were older.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
some had really big families.
Oh, yeah.
The Thompsons had a really big family.
Yes, they did.
And who else had a big family?
Well, they're the only ones on that block, I think, that had a big family.
Yeah.
Except ours. We had four.
Yeah, we had four. Larson's had two. Glanders had two. Cummings had two. Holy smokes. Burnside's had two. Oh, the Hayes's had a plenty, though. Hayes's had must have had like five.
Hayes?
B. Hayes.
Oh, B. Hayes. No, she had...
We had Don, Patty,
and then...
And Terry?
Yeah, three.
Just three?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, what we called our street the promoter street.
The what street?
Promoter. They promoted having families.
Promoted street.
And everybody had a family.
It couldn't possibly be that they were all Lutheran and we were Catholic, could it be? That they had less kids?
Well, that is a good, yeah.
Yeah. But that's a religious thing. We don't talk about that now.
No.
In those days, you didn't talk about it either. It was awfully strict, you know. Remember, you never let us go to the vacation Bible school over at St. Luke's? They'd have vacation Bible school and we'd all want to go with the rest of the neighborhood. No, can't go there. Don't go to the Lutheran church. Don't go inside, especially. So we never went to vacation Bible school because the nuns took the summer off. They took vacation.
How did we get to church?
Oh, yeah, we went to church in the truck, didn't we?
No.
No?
You used to go down to school, in school. That's where you went. The nuns would teach you on Sunday mornings after service at school, and their school.
Yes.
It was right across the alley from the church.
Yes, and the nuns taught Sunday school.
That's right.
Yeah, but in the summertime, they didn't have... So they didn't have a Bible.
No.
No, because they were busy.
That's right.
Going to school. The nuns were going back to school.
You had your life.
Okay. All right. But you had a lot of fun in the neighborhood. There was a lot of activity. The adults had activity.
Well, we had something happening all the time. I had the best place to live because everybody was nice to everybody. It all worked hard for our money. And the folks, the parents, those that worked, they just made ends meet, and kids never expected an awful lot, and they didn't get a lot, but they had a lot of fun together. They were all played together.
Yep. Remember when you used to go to coffee, in the afternoon over at Eva Smith's. All the ladies in the neighborhood, well, not all the ladies, but four or five of the ladies in the neighborhood go over there and have coffee in the afternoon over to Eva's.
Yeah, we go over there and have coffee. She'd have coffee and some kind of pastry of some kind she'd get. We always enjoyed that, but we had to make sure we were alone. Our husbands couldn't be. If we see our husband coming by, we'd run like heck for home.
Yeah, went home, yeah.
Yeah.
And Flo was around there, Flo Mahoney.
Oh, Flo was one of the greatest.
She was one of the older ladies in the neighborhood when I was small.
Well, she was, I don't know how old she was when she died, but she must have been in her late 80s. She never had any teeth.
Never had any teeth.
Well, we never knew her. You never knew her with teeth.
I don't think so, no.
But it was fun. She was always a good time. And they always had that little store in the corner. They always kept it. They always was decent to everybody.
Yeah.
Came in there.
See, I never knew them when they had the store. That was before my time. The Cianciolas owned the store when I was growing up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know who I never knew? I never knew the Lewises.
I never knew them either.
They were between Linscoogs,
yes,
and Tibbetts.
Yeah.
You know, and never ever did I know them.
I don't think there was ever a woman there. I think it's just a man.
Just one guy?
One grandpa there.
Yeah.
One man.
Forever.
Well, I don't know. He lived there as long as we did, I think. Or he came there sometime when we were there and stayed. But I never knew him very well. We knew all the people in our neighborhood.
Kind of like the Olsons across the street next door to Del and Eva's. Wasn't until I was 15, 16 years old before I found out, talked to them in that. He was
a nice man.
He worked with you for a little while, didn't he?
No.
No?
But he was a nice
Maybe
man.
He went to the American, to the VFW. He belonged to the VFW.
He may have.
Yeah.
But that's so many years ago that kind of forget those things that happened. But his wife, she didn't want any cars on the street. She used to call the cops and tell that there's cars parked in on her street. And she did.
In front of her house, huh?
Yeah.
Oh,
in front of
boy.
Her house.
Yeah, and then the McConvilles. The McConvilles I never knew till they ran into me with their car. Remember no. when he hit me with their car outside church?
I never knew that.
Yes, yeah, and she was a nurse. Her name was Maxine. And his name was Jack.
Yeah.
And Jack worked for the electric company.
What were their kids' names?
What?
What were their kids' names?
The girls' name?
No, they had girls.
Yeah, I had two girls, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. They were both older than me, way older than me.
No, they weren't.
Yeah?
They were cookies age, I thought.
Well, that's 6 years.
Well, that's older, that's younger.
Well, that would, when I was 10, they were 16. Anyways, they never went to public schools. They always went to parochial school.
Yes, they did.
They had a nice house. I think they had the only brick house in the whole neighborhood.
Yeah.
It was all brick.
It was nice.
The only drawback was that big hill. Oh, they had a big hill in front of their house.
Yes, they did.
Yep. Jack McConville used to mow that big hill.
Yeah.
Walk all the way down it, push that lawnmower all the way up. Walk all the way down it, push the lawnmower all the way up it. That was a big hill. Then he had that hill in the back, too.
Yeah.
You know, you came out their back door and it went up like this.
That's
and then
right.
It leveled off and that's where the garages were.
Yeah.
Huh?
But they're all very nice people.
And then we had Mert and Ollie.
Oh.
The Johnsons. They were the They were the fun ones in the neighborhood.
Well, she was a fun one, but she used to pull tricks on her husband. And everybody would wait for him to come home, and he'd know about it. Boy, he'd raise the dickens with her. Everybody heard it, too.
And then he'd come running out the front door, and she'd come running out behind him with the fry pan, swinging the fry pan at the, trying to hit him with it. I don't remember that.
Well,
you didn't sleep on the front porch of the house either.
No, I didn't.
Yes. There was a lot of activity out in front of the house in the evenings that you didn't see.
Oh, that's why you wanted to sleep out on the front porch all the time, huh?
Yeah, and I could see what the neighbors were doing. Yeah?
Yeah. We had a lot of neighbors.
We were the only family in the neighborhood that didn't have a garden and had more fresh vegetables than anybody else.
Yes, sir.
From everybody else's garden.
They always bring it over to us.
Yes.
We liked it too.
They brought it over to us.
They thought an awful lot of us.
Yep. It was a good neighborhood.
We lived in a good neighborhood.
But you know what?
What?
They're all gone.
Yeah.
They're all memories.
Yeah.
You're the only one that still has a foothold on all these memories.
No, Ethel May's still there.
Ethel May next door from the Ryan.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she wasn't one of the adults. She was just one of the oldest children.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of adopted kids in the neighborhood.
Oh,
both the Burnsides were adopted.
Yes, they were.
And was Ethel May?
Yes.
Ethel May was adopted. And the Jacobsons?
Yeah, you don't have to go that far. Why cross us? Those are both adopted children.
The Condrills?
Yes.
Oh, okay. And then how about over at Smith's, Gail, and then the boy, Roy, what's his name, Roy? No.
Smith.
Gail Smith.
We got our first television from your dad moving over to Iowa, and he didn't have any money to pay for it, so he asked what Jim wanted, and they had a television. Jim says, a television. And he got the television. That was our first television.
And who was that from?
That was from Bob.
Bob Smith. Okay, he was a veteran. Was he a veteran from World War II?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they had a daughter, Gail.
That wasn't their daughter. That was their niece.
Was a niece?
Yeah, she lived with them. Her mother had died, and her father... I remember when they brought over there. Mrs. Smith said, oh no, she was too old to start making a small child. But she took her, and she had a swing for her. And that little girl used to swing. She never wanted anybody to bother the girl. So she had this swing out there. And the little girl would swing and swing and swing.
Yeah, Eva must have been pretty old then.
Yeah, Eva was old. But yeah. And we went to visit them when they moved across the street first. And then after a while, when he wasn't able to work no more, Dell wasn't able to work anymore, they went out to Veterans Hospital. And Jim and I went out and visited them.
Went to Masonic. Went out to Masonic.
Yeah.
Home.
Yeah, Masonic.
Out on Normandale Boulevard, over on the Minnesota River.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Dell worked for the city court.
He was a deputy clerk of district court.
A deputy clerk of district court.
Yes.
Oh, he had a pretty good position.
Oh, he had a real good job. She never washed clothes. She sent everything to be washed.
She sent everything out to the laundry? Wow. That's kind of special.
Her mother lived with them part of the time. And the other part, the mother would go out to her other daughter who lived in California.
So, wow. That was a... And then the Linskooks. Linskook, yeah. he, He had a father and some sons, and they were in the cement business. Now, I think I was pretty young.
No, they're married.
Well, how old was Mr. Linscoop?
He was old. They both died.
And then he have a couple of boys?
Yeah, he had one, I know. But I don't know. He was a man that worked with
cement.
Cement. And I remember when we had our house fixed, painted in cement, with cement rub, the foundation, he came over and told us it was too late in the fall to put cement on. It was going to freeze before.
Touch point. Too late to touch point.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and so we stopped up for doing it. Boy, they didn't like it either.
Yeah, you'd walk around South Minneapolis and look at, because we all had sidewalks, both sides of the street, and you look in the corner and see who made the sidewalk. And
yeah.
Linscoop's name was there a lot.
Yeah.
Carlson and Levine's name was there a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they weren't a neighbor, Carlson and Levine weren't.
I don't know.
Oh. Huh. Who else did we have special in the neighbor? You know, the Jacobsons, they were special, but I never quite understood. I was too young, I think, to understand. There was two
brothers.
Two brothers that lived alone.
And one sister.
And then the sister lived next door, right? She was a nurse and she lived next door.
I don't remember that.
And then the two men were painters.
Yeah.
House painters.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they got our we put the food in.
Refrigerator.
They got our refrigerator. We bought a new one.
Got a new icebox.
Icebox. They got an old one. They just use that for heat, for frozen all the time. They're frozen goods that we cut.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. You know, that's kind of funny. I'm 65, and I still call the refrigerator the icebox.
Yeah.
And I never, ever remember
Ever having one,
that's right.
We never had an icebox, I can remember.
Nope, we never did. Not that I remember.
I don't remember any icebox.
I remember when we bought that new really big refrigerator.
It was
an up and down thing, and it said Viking on the handle. Viking Foods. And that's what the Everts. Supermarket, yes. Everett Meat Market.
That's who we bought it from.
Yep, it was Viking Foods.
Yeah.
Oh, that was really big then.
They had good meat though.
They what?
They had good meat.
Oh yes, they had great meat. They had great meat, yeah. And then L.V. Olson was living with us then.
Yeah, L.V. Olson lived with us.
He was a handyman carpenter.
Yeah.
And he built some things around the house, built a couple closets in the back hallway, built a closet upstairs in one of the two bedrooms.
Yes.
And then he took it in where we had a big flower bin. He used to pull it out in the front and it would flop down, and it was a big flower bin, and that was in the cupboards around the kitchen. He took that out and made a clothes chute. Went right downstairs to the, right there by the washing machine.
Yes, it did.
And he took the doorway out of the wall between the kitchen and the dining room. They rebuilt that wall and moved the doorway from one side to the other.
Yeah.
So that, I don't know, why did you do that?
Well, we did that because, we had bought a dining room set that had a nice cupboard, and we used that wall there to put the nice cupboard at. But the reason we did was we had a hole in the corner that we did put it on, had a door to go down the basement there. And there was a big space from there onto the stove that had nothing in it. So it was lost space. myself by changing the door over to that side. We had, that was taken care of, and we had a place to put our refrigerator. Our refrigerator was put over on that side then.
Yes. Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Do you remember the old kitchen that had that red top, red formica top?
That was the kitchen here.
Well, it was a kitchen there too, didn't it? Or was that the kitchen?
I don't remember having red top.
What color was the top of the formica in Longfellow there?
I don't remember. I thought it was white. Maybe it wasn't. That's a long time ago, kiddo. How many years ago is that?
Oh, I suppose you left Longfellow 38 years ago, maybe?
Yeah.
40 years ago?
So you can't expect me to know everything.
Well, you were only 56.
At the time?
Yeah, when you left. That's 40 years ago. Yeah, well, you know, and we had good wood cabinets.
Yeah. Kitchen cabinets.
Yep.
He put in kitchen cabinets.
Some of them were new, some of them were older.
Yeah, and we had red tops on them.
That's what I said. You had a red top, a red formica.
Top, yes.
Yep. Yeah. Had a linoleum floor with all kinds of little squares in it.
Yeah.
Yep. That you bought it. Where did Grandpa buy that? Linoleum Louise.
Yeah, that's
remember what Linoleum Louise?
What?
Yeah, he was over on 26th and Lindale. 26th and Lindale. Yeah, he was in the northwest corner, right across the street from the CC Club.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole neighborhood's changed, you know. There ain't much of that left.
Yes. I was there about 3 months ago to visit Ethel May, and there was men coming to the door and begging for food. And I couldn't understand that. And she said they have a lot of them. They have to call a policeman when they come because they want money. And they try everything to get the money from you. And she said she was afraid to kind of have them around. But we never had any, well, we lived there. There was all good people in that block on both sides.
Yeah, and a lot of good people in the neighborhood. Yeah. What else do you remember about the neighborhood?
Well.
Remember the floods?
Oh, yeah, but that was in, we never got any water in our basement, though.
Well, you know why that was?
Because we'd plug our sewer.
And we didn't have a floor drain.
No.
And so the only drains we had were two that were hooked up to our tubs, our laundry tubs.
Right.
We'd put a rubber plug in there and we'd stick two big bricks on top of it. And yeah, it never backed up then. But all the people that had floor drains,
they all had water.
Always had water in their basement.
They go swimming in the water down there.
Huh?
You guys, you go swimming in the water.
Yeah, it was flood water, I think. I don't think it was sanitary water.
It wasn't real flood water. It's what it was. Yes, it was.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and then finally, it took the life of Mr. Burnside. One of the big floods did.
Yeah.
Side of his basement caved in from the water pressure, and he was down there at the time and didn't get up. And then they took the city finally admitted that they had a terrible problem and that there was no way to correct it, because actually what it was 19th Avenue was a direct, what would you call it, a direct, almost like a river or a creek coming from Lake Hiawatha. I mean, they built it up and they changed it and stuff, but every time you had all that rain, all the water from the neighborhoods would all run downhill into the park, Sibley Field Park. And then once that filled up, then it would fill up 19th Avenue. And they finally, the city finally admitted that they...
And he got all the houses off of 19th Avenue.
Took it and bought all the houses, both sides of the street.
Yep.
Tore them all down. Made it just a big greenway, a big, like a park, like a parkway. You know, and on each side you still had the alleys.
Yeah.
And one side of the alley went to Longfellow, and one side of the alley went to 20th. Yeah, and all the people there, they all lost their houses. They were imminent domain, or actually, I think some of them got so flooded the last time they were condemned.
Yeah,
and they're all gone. That was a sad day. We were both gone then, though.
Yeah.
But our friend, one of the Thompson boys, Tommy, told me about it because he still lived in the area. And that was a really sad day.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we've chatted enough, Ma.
Yeah, I think
for now,
we have,
reminiscing makes me lonely for the old neighborhood.
For the old neighborhood, and we had good friends there.
Yeah. A lot of good friends there.
Well, that is pretty much the epitome of living in the city.
Isn't it?
Knowing your neighbors. Knowing
That's right.
how to get from place to place and recognizing that it's not about who you are, but where you were and the places that you went every day.
I agree. It's like when I start listening to their stories, I get little recalls like when I was on the Cummings yard, he had an old car and the hood came off and he set the hood right on the ground and I was up on the fender and I fell backwards and I took this huge slice out of my butt and they had to bring me down and get it all sewn up. And then I remember the iceman that worked across the street and he had a big ice truck, and he would break off with his ice pick a big piece of ice and give it to us kids, and we would break it in sub pieces, and we'd all get ice and eat it. I remember that. Those are recalls I got when I was listening to it.
All right. Well,
yep.
We are pretty much done for the week. So go back to the city or wherever you're from and enjoy making more stories about living there. See you next week.
The city never sleeps, the saying goes, but what happens there is a place full to the brim with people and things to do. You can live there, work there, and play there, and it is definitely no country picnic to be there. What are your tales of living in the city? Jeff Young,
Roland Willits,
Old Men Stories.
You've been listening to Old Men Stories on WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network. The story for the day may end here, but the adventure continues. Join us next time for another round of stories around the virtual campfire. Roland and Jeff want to hear what stories you have to share too. Join the circle over at www.oldmenstories.org or send Roland and Jeff an email at oldmenstories@wq4d.net. That's oldmenstories@wq4d.net. And remember that you are already a master storyteller in your own right. We want to hear your story.